the guy who drives it through.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate we never won anything.
Man's in trouble, there's deep kick. The super sub has done it again. And Motherwell are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson, defenders backing off. A good deflection! And there goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park! Twisting! Shouting! Shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Today, myself, Jay and Buster will go over the excellent 3-1 victory against Dundee yesterday, look ahead to the visit to Celtic Park next weekend, and talk about whatever else takes our fancy over the next hour or so. Guys, welcome along.
Cheers.
Good afternoon.
Well, I've been reliably informed that Jay's dogs are sleeping at this moment in time, so we shouldn't be interrupted. You will be surprised to know that we don't have a impressive professional studio. We have to deal with things like pets and things and such like. Anyway, Jay, yesterday's display against Dundee, very, very encouraging. The first half, I would say, was the best 45 minutes of football I've seen the team play this season. Let Dundee back into it a wee bit in the second half, but going forward, we can look to the festive fixtures with a degree of optimism, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. It's still too early, I think, to say that we've turned a corner or anything like that, but it was great first half, as you said. I think I wasn't at Inverness in the first day of the season, so I can't comment on that. I know that got quite rave reviews from those that were there. But for me, that first half is the best that we've played this season that I've seen. The attacking football was great. We cut Dundee open time and time again, and it genuinely just came down to trying to cut the ball back. If we'd been half decent at cutting the ball back when we got into a good position, we would have been in, you know, at half time, possibly 4 or 5 goals up. I think there was 4 or 5 times that McDonald, Johnson, Grimshaw got into great positions almost in the byline, tried to cut it back, and just ball was either, you know, too far or too behind or wherever it was that it was, you know, it was bizarre. It didn't feel as though it was the Motherwell team that we've seen so far this season. It was a completely different mentality, completely different performance levels from every player on the park. It was a great team performance. I think that was the main thing, because I don't think there was anybody that particularly stood out as an individual for me. I think, you know, last night someone asked me who I thought man of the match was, and I struggled to pick someone, not because, you know, it was poor performances from individuals, but it was just a really good team performance, and we've not really seen that this season. So yeah, the first half was a fantastic performance. Second half, once Dundee scored, you did have a little spell where it looked like typical Motherwell, where perhaps we were about to chuck it away, but we managed to get through that and scored the third. And yeah, I mean, Celtic Park's the kind of place where we probably won't get anything, but there's no reason not to be a lot more optimistic getting into these fixtures now.
Buster, a few players that haven't featured prior to yesterday, particularly Ben Hall at centre-half, who came in and cruised through the game very, very comfortable. I think he was guided through the game a lot by Stephen McManus, but very impressive debut for the teenager there. David Clarkson coming off the bench, and I thought he looked quite trim. He looked very sharp. He set up the goal at the end. So, encouraging signs there as well.
Yeah, as you said, David Clarkson seemed to come on. He seemed to play more a right midfield role than, you know,
maybe what we're used to seeing him up front. But as you say, he seemed to use the ball well. You know, he's obviously what is he, 31 now or something? He's 30, 31. He's obviously, you know, quite an intelligent player. So he seemed to use the ball a lot better than that side when we got there. His tracking back, I thought, was a lot better as well than what we had at the time. He seemed to sort of steady us up a wee bit on that side as well. And as you say, you know, he put the ball in for Pirro and Pirro scored. Ben Hall, again, absolutely brilliant. You know, you wouldn't have known it was his first competitive game, senior game, I suppose, if, you know, somebody hadn't told you. And again, as you said as well, Steve McManus, yesterday I thought Steve McManus was brilliant as well. The fact that, you know, that no one had any complaints about them goes to show, because usually there's always something where centre-half's pairing, whether it, you know, be slipping or the odd mistake here and there. Thought McManus was brilliant. There was two or three times where he went up and he won headers the way he did 5-6 years ago, you know, when he was getting games for Scotland. And again, as you say, Ben Hall, again, won every header just about gone. Dundee's goal was, I couldn't really pick any real faults in it. Took a bit of deflection as it went past him, but I thought the defence yesterday was pretty good as well. Conor Ripley made a few good saves as well, so good team performance. McDonald and Moult up top as well seem to be working really well. I'd said before I'd like to see Skippy score a goal or two, you know, and he just seemed to be in the right place at the right time there when the ball broke to him and he, you know, flicked it past the goalkeeper.
The thing about the Dundee goal as well, there was no signs that that goal was coming. When it did, we were in complete control and it did change the course of the game for the next 20 minutes or so, but to be in a 2-0 lead and completely dominating the game is quite impressive, considering where we are in terms of league position, and Dundee you would consider would be a rival for avoiding that playoff spot. I think they will be dragged into it despite their good start to the season. They didn't really accumulate enough points to consider themselves safe, and now they're in a bit of dip for them. They have been dragged back in. You look at the league table and there's now a kind of collection of, I would say, 5 or 6 teams who possibly don't believe they'll make the top 6, but they'll be determined to avoid that playoff position. And it's quite nice to be one of these teams now, because before that, we were perhaps looking over our shoulders at the Dundee United.
Yep, as you say, we were in complete control for a good bit of the game. I felt maybe 5-10 minutes before we sort of took our foot off the pedal a wee bit, and Dundee kept possession of the ball really well for a bit, and that's when they then got their goal. But there was times as well yesterday where we were passing the ball about, and again, maybe 20-30 passes, don't get me wrong, none of them came to anything, but you know, we were keeping the ball well, and that's something that we hadn't done at all this season. And as Jay says, it's far too early to say, you know, we've turned any corners or anything, but you know, there's been a few encouraging displays under Maginu, as well as a couple of disastrous ones as well, but it's good to see that, you know, we're possibly taking steps in the right direction anyway.
And Jay, I look at the table. I know the manager says he doesn't pay much attention to it, but I would say that with the exception of maybe Dundee United and Thistle not playing out a draw, results went for us yesterday.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you mentioned the idea of how tight it is between, you know, pretty much the playoff place and the top 6. And that's exactly why, you know, whenever we've spoken the last few weeks about McGee kind of tinkering with the team and putting Johnson at left back and, you know, still appearing to use games as friendlies, I think the point I made, particularly after the Ross County game, was that it's all very well getting to know a team, but, you know, you don't want to get caught adrift, you don't want to be playing catch-up, you know, further down the line. And, you know, the league table just now shows exactly why it was important to try and, you know, win games, to try and get into a habit of getting results rather than treating games like friendlies. Because, you know, if we continue to have more performances like the Ross County game at Dingwall, and we might still do, as I said, it's too early to you know, suggest that we've turned any corners. But if we get more games like what we did at Dingwall, then the chances of pushing up the table, the chances of making the top six, or at least being, you know, far away from the playoff places, that gets, you know, smaller and smaller as the weeks go on. And yet, there we go. We've had one game postponed. You know, who knows? We might have went to Thistle and we may have won. But, you know, out of the last two games, 4 points, and suddenly you can start looking up the table a little bit. You know, Dundee United are absolutely dire. I think, what, they're 8 points now adrift at the bottom of the league. So we're kind of in a situation now where, okay, Celtic Park's a difficult place to go, but then you've got Tannadice, you know, St Johnstone, again, it's a difficult game, but they'll be at Firth Park. You've got Hamilton Accies, which is a winnable game. And suddenly you're looking at going into 2016, or the first few weeks of 2016, looking up towards the top six rather than looking behind you. So, you know, particularly when results go your way, that's quite good as well. But hopefully what we're seeing now is the realisation from McGee that he knows who his best players are, he knows what he wants to do, and we can start building from there rather than still kind of tinkering a little bit. You know, I don't think there's any surprise that he's been there a few weeks now. He's started getting to know the players, and suddenly guys like Jake Taylor and Theo Robinson are nowhere near the team. I mean, that's logical because they're shit. So basically, you know, we're now at a situation where things seem to be clicking because, you know, McGee seems to have kind of gotten to know the team. And so if that continues, then yeah, we can start climbing the table and looking ahead of ourselves rather than worrying about playoff places and relegation zones.
See, I know I'm battering on about the league table, but it is from 5th, Ross County, and 24 points to ourselves, and 10th. There's 6 points separating these teams, so you could basically throw a blanket over the... You could divide the league into three, basically. Dundee United are beginning to really get cast adrift at the bottom, which has surprised me. I thought Pat Lynam would go in there and really turn things around. I was impressed with the job he did at Kilmarnock, and I thought he'd be able to kind of to boost that team and push them up the table. That's certainly not happened. The significance yesterday of the result for me is I would like to see us be more commanding at Firth Park. I don't expect us to go on the road and take points back wherever we go, but at Firth Park I think we should fancy our chances of beating every team with the exception of Celtic. But again, we've shown in the past we can run Celtic close on home soil. I know it's a bit of a footballing cliche, but turning your home ground into a bit of a fortress, that would be a huge boost to be able to rely on getting results at Firth Park, which we have struggled a bit to do recently.
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea of being able to kind of at least replicate the first half performance from yesterday more often at Firth Park. I mean, if we played don't get me wrong, Dundee were pretty poor, but it wasn't as though we just happened to, you know, get a bit of luck against that poor side. The performance in the first half was fantastic, and if we can replicate that, you know, against a team like St Johnstone who are doing well, you know, I noticed that someone was talking recently about, I think it was in the press, about how, you know, St Johnstone should be pushing for second and all this kind of chat. But if we can replicate that first half performance against teams like St Johnstone, you know, we've already picked up a point against a really good Hearts side at Firth Park. So, no, I agree. I think if we can maintain the performance levels from yesterday at Firth Park, then we will beat more teams than not. And that's what we need to be doing, because there is... If we do manage to get things right, and we do manage to get things clicking, and we do start to be as consistently decent, then there is no reason why we can't push for the top six. But to do that, then we need to be winning games at Firth Park, regardless of who they're against. So it'll be interesting to see. As I said, it's amazing how, you know, such a good first half performance, and suddenly we're talking about top six, and we're talking about, you know, possibly beating Celtic and St Johnstone and things like that. Whereas if you go back a couple of weeks ago, that Ross County performance is one of the worst games I think I've ever been at. So, you know, consistency is the main thing. It's all very well, you know, picking up 3 points yesterday with a great performance, but then if we go a couple of weeks having Ross County away style performances, then all the good work gets undone. So it's about consistency, and I think one of the main keys to you know, consistent performance levels will be consistency in team selection. And I think that's something we've not had up until now, because McGee has been trying to, you know, get to grips with the team and trying to work out who his best players are. And as I've said, treating a few games like friendly. So if that's gone, if he's moved past that, then I think that we can start to push towards being a lot more consistent.
I've said it before as well. Anybody in this league, I feel, can be MD. Now, as Barra says, and maybe with the exception of Celtic, MD in this league can be MD. Dundee United right now are looking honking. But, you know, there will come a time where they go on a wee run. I don't expect them to stay as bad as they are for the rest of the season. Who knows where they'll finish, but they're going to start picking up points soon, I think. And it's important, as you know, as Yusuf says, that we try and maybe pick up a few points, especially at home, just in case, you know, the results on the road don't go in our favour. And then we don't want to see teams like Dundee United or whoever else is below us picking up points, and we suddenly find ourselves slipping back down the table.
Well, that's interesting. I was going to say, when Sparra mentioned Dundee United and about how he was surprised, and you said, Sparra, about being surprised that you thought Pat Alainen would have turned it around, there's nothing to suggest that he might still do that. It might just be taking a little bit longer because, you know, McNamara's left such a big mess behind. It might take him a little bit longer, but it could happen. It could happen, you know, January, February, suddenly Dundee United, things could click, and, you know, the new players he's bringing in could start working well, and they could start picking up points. And that's why it's important for us to maintain the performance levels on Saturday, so that if something like that does happen, I mean, you just need to look at Ross County last season.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah, we started.
Yeah, I think we're all
thinking that. But that's it. We finished the season actually very strongly. I was listening to Chuck Young on the radio on the way home yesterday, and he was talking about, they were talking about the playoffs, and he'd said about how the performance that Motherwell put in the playoffs was, you know, a one-off, or, well, two-off, if you like, the first and second leg, about how, you know, we turned it on and we hadn't performed at that at all during the season. We had been poor during the season, but we had actually had a couple of really good performances against St Mirren and Accies at Fir Park, and we actually finished the season pretty strongly, and it was purely because Ross County kept winning games that we couldn't get out of the playoff situation. So, you know, I think it's, although Dundee United are 8 points behind, you know, they're a good enough side, they've got good enough players, and Pat Alainen is an experienced and, you know, a capable manager, and they could turn it around. So it's important for us, as much as we're talking about the top six, it's important for us to remember that and to try and get as many points on the board so that if something like that does happen, we will still be safe.
Well, briefly look ahead to the fixture against Celtic next Saturday. Buster, I don't know whether it comes at a good time for us or not. I would like to have followed up yesterday's win with another fixture that we fancied our chances of taking away a result. But this isn't a Celtic side to particularly fear, I don't think. I think if we go there with the right mentality, don't put 10 men behind the ball and try and soak up pressure, because the inevitable will happen in that case. But if we go there perhaps with a degree of caution, but try and attack them and try and create some chances, then we could come out with something. There's teams already went to Celtic Park and taken points this season, and after a real morale booster yesterday, then I would say that is what we have to do. We have to try and build on it. We might not get anything, but a positive performance matters a lot in this instance, rather than going there and getting turned over quite embarrassingly, like we did the last visit, which was 4 or 5-0 coming on 10.
Well, you said that yourself. There's a balance you need. You know, you can't really go sit there. I don't think we've got the players capable of sitting in anyway and hoping for a draw. So there is definitely obviously a balance we need there. We need, again, what is it going to be? We pick our fastest players and we try and hit them on the counter, or do we try and, you know, do we try and keep the ball, play a bit of football? But again, as you said, though, it's one of those things where I don't think MD's expecting anything. You did say, you know, they're not a team to be feared, which is true when you look through, you know, the last 20 years or whatever, the teams that the bigger teams, Celtic and that, have had. But the problem being there, you know, they cherry pick the best players in the league, and some of them go there and look absolutely horrible. You know, the boy who scored against us the last time, Chiefty, he looks rotten. And, you know, as I say, he was one of Dundee United's best players. they've basically picked on the United Queen, Mackay Stephen, and probably the best of the three, Stuart Armstrong. Now, with, I don't know, there's another couple of players obviously left in the United as well, but with the three of them, they don't look anything like the team they were. As up and down as they were when they had them, but, you know, it's that's the problem being here, is saying they don't look like a... They're not a team to be feared, but they're by far the strongest team in our league. And, you know, the fact that they can just cherry-pick players whenever they need to goes to show, you know, I don't think there's ever a hope in hell of any of the provincial teams ever catching, you know, a Rangers or a Celtic or whatever, if, you know, if the Rangers managed to come up and take part in where they were 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's the thing is as well, it's not the intimidating atmosphere that perhaps Celtic Park of old was as well, where you would expect a crowd of just over 30,000. They'll then announce it as 50,000, but it's not a hostile atmosphere. The players shouldn't be overwhelmed by the occasion, that's for sure. I think there was a few of the more inexperienced players. Again, we don't like pinpointing players, but I thought particularly in the 1-0 game earlier in the season, Wes Fletcher seemed to play the occasion rather than actually just playing it as it was. Celtic, maybe on reputation, were a bit better than they were on that day, for sure. It was a horrible game, but I think there was a few that looked a bit overwhelmed by it, and they shouldn't be, because as I say, and as you've pointed out, that they aren't the force that they once were. Yes, they're a hell of a lot better than the majority of teams in the league at the moment, but you go with the right mentality and you might get something from it. I know that we're just as likely to get a decent performance as we are to lose 4 or 5-0, but I think that you've got to build in performances in games like this and come into these big games over Christmas time with a degree of confidence, because otherwise, if you follow up a real morale booster, as I said, with a honking performance against Celtic, that could affect the Dundee United game, the St Johnston game, and the Accies game, which all fall within 10 days of each other.
Well, I watched the Mark McGee interview on the Motherwell YouTube channel, and I think he got it right as well. He says, you know, this performance, this result, puts us in a good frame of mind for going to Parkhead. Now, again, whether or not we get a result, whether or not we play well, you know, it depends entirely on, you know, what happens on the day, what players turn up, how they are mentally and things like that. But you can't, if we you're beat by Dundee, we wouldn't be as upbeat about going towards Parkhead next week as we are just now. You know, we're probably talking about losing 7-0 just now, for example. But the thing is, as you say, it's not an intimidating place. There's, whether it's 50,000 or 30,000, they sit there, they sit in their hands, then they score and they get a wee cheer. Even Celtic fans, I know, they'll tell you, they go to the games, you know, it's a routine for them, they go to the games, they come home, whatever, then they maybe get a, what they call a big game, you know, a European game, or if they draw the Rangers in the cup or something like that, you know, so it's no, you probably got a more intimidating crowd at Firth Park for the Celtic fans than you would at Parkgate. So it's one of those things where, as you say, if the players play the occasion rather than, you know, the players they're up against, that can certainly go against them. You know, if for example you turned up against a Stuart Armstrong in a Dundee United jersey, he is a great player, we all know that, but does it make much of a difference whether or not he's got a green and white jersey on? You know, it's all about, as you say, playing against the players rather than, you know, thinking about the occasion, as you put it. So I'm not expecting anything from Parkhead, but it'll be fun to see what's what, and, you know, whether or not we decide to go to the game, or as one of you suggested, we go down the Gallagher and sit in a Celtic pub and watch it, we'll see what happens.
I think this could be a follow-up live podcast. From behind enemy lines. No, I certainly won't be spending £26 to go and sit in a restricted view corner. That's The thing is, I suppose so. It's just I've not been for years to Celtic Park. Can't actually remember the last one. I think the last one I would have been at was the 1-0 win, Simon Lappin. And even then, I was sitting in my mate's Celtic season ticket seat.
Well, no, I was just going to say, I try and like get along to Celtic Park, you know, once every season or two, but as I say, I can understand anybody who doesn't want to go. It's overpriced. You really are treated like garbage. Some of the abuse you get in and around the ground. Presuming they've not horsed you. If you go there and get horsed, then they take very little notice of you. But if you go and get a result, then it's horrible walking outside the ground afterwards. So I'll probably wait and see. It might be a last minute decision to go. But I can understand anybody who doesn't. But I do remember that Simon Lappin game. That was a good one. I also remember Bob Malcolm getting sent off for absolutely destroying Massimo Donati.
Well, there's every possibility Stephen Pearson's got that in him to destroy someone.
Well, that is something that Piro's certainly added to his game since he left first time around. He does seem to have. Well, in fact, I'm pretty sure he had a bit of a nasty streak when he was, you know, a young player at Firth Park as well. But I think, you know, when you're playing in the wing, there's less opportunity to see it. But now that he's a more central midfield role, I think that if Piro remains at Firth Park for a couple of years still, then I think there'll be a few red cards involved in that as well with some of his challenges at the moment.
I'm a bit disappointed at the live revelation there that you're not coming to the Gallagate with us. We need as many honours as we possibly can.
Oh, no, that's fine. That suits me. There's no doubt there'll be plenty of pubs there that will be showing it on a dodgy stream, so I'm more than happy. No club colours.
I definitely no scarves. Jay, I think possibly we'll move on to the Remember Well question. There's not a great deal of other kind of news items that have broke through the week, unless you can think of anything in particular.
Not massively. Not really. I'll crack on with the Remember Well question, and if you think anything while I'm doing it, you can mention it. But yeah, we were talking, I think it was wasting some time and work on Thursday or Friday morning, having a chat on Facebook about young players and about how we kind of felt that Motherwell have been pretty poor at youth development in recent years. I suppose we could maybe talk about that a wee bit more after it, but just trying to think of players who perhaps broke into the side or were coming through the under-21s that were really highly rated and then didn't quite reach their potential. So we're just looking for some names for that. Stuart Marr said, "I think Carswell could have been a good player for us." George Farker agrees and said, "I thought Carswell was going to be a good player, but he faded badly." George also says, "As much as I enjoyed the McCall era, those years did not progress any young players through the first team." Our friend of the show, Ian Buchanan, says, "Look no further than the Catman, such an intelligent player. The most recent, however, has to be Paul Hookers and Boozebag in the Dam Slain." Interesting shout for Alan McDonald there. I had the privilege of playing with him for a few months at Welltrust FC when he joined us for a wee while. But that was obviously later on in his career. But I think that's actually the oldest player we've had mentioned. I was expecting maybe, you know, one or two names from, you know, perhaps decades ago, but it's all very recent. We had Scott Thompson. I always thought Ross Forbes would end up being a big player for us. Raymond Laurie says, "Jamie Pollock, intelligent player, skillful and a good eye for goal, played alongside Forbes and Lawless in a very good young team." Gordon Jaye said, "Any young player that decided to join the old scum when they had bags of potential for an easy career is sitting on the bench collecting a wage." I think that's something we would all agree with. Duncan Maguire, this was an interesting one. He said, "Saunders and Francis Angol should have both got more of a chance, in my opinion." I must admit, when I set the question, I was not expecting St. Francis Angol to get a mention. Del Somerville said, "Stephen Lawless, now playing regularly at Thistle, always thought we made a mistake getting rid of him." Joe McKelvey said, "Paul Slane for me looked a terrific prospect in those European games. Sad to see a young guy with clearly little sense make bad decision after bad decision and see his career nosedive." Stuart Jack says, "Saunders and Slane." Johnny Warnock said, "Hoped Saunders and Forbes would have been fixtures by now. Paul Slane mucked his chances up as well." That's all on the Facebook page if anybody wants to go on and get involved, because it's actually went from just suggestions to actually, like, you know, a few conversations ongoing if anybody wants to get involved. Over on Twitter, Matt Miller said, Ross Forbes, proverbial wand of a left foot. Remember his goal against St Johnson, but no pace. Vigers mini-me, which I thought was actually a really good description. You know, the mini-me Ross Vigers. Ross Vigers, there we go, it's a hybrid. Ross Forbes. Dave Scott said, I remember the game. He's posted up a link, and it's the 3-2 defeat at Fir Park to Celtic in 2009. I think Gannon was the manager, and he says, I remember this game and thinking McHugh, Meakin and Pollock all looked very promising. Rick MFC, another mention for Paul Slane, he says, whatever happened to him? And the actual Remember Well Twitter account got involved and said, how about any of Paul Slane, Ross Forbes or Kenny Wright? I've got to say, Kenny Wright is one I actually thought would get a few mentions. A fellow Blantyre High lad. I think it was kind of weird when he was breaking through, because I remember we played sevens on a Monday night and stuff like that, and when it's someone you know, I think there's always that kind of disbelief, or it's a bit awkward when folk are posting on Steelman Online thread after thread about how Kenny Wright's going to be the next James McFadden. So I was quite surprised that he never quite got as many mentions, because I do remember there was a lot of love for Kenny when he was breaking through, and of course that never quite happened. So that was, you know, very recent shouts mostly, apart from Alan McDonald. I don't know if there's any that spring to your two guys' minds.
Not many that haven't been mentioned. I can remember the boy Mark Archdeacon, who was...
Oh, aye, because it was not Archdeacon and Murphy, was that not the two?
Yeah,
the strike force for the youth team.
And I can remember him being talked of fairly highly, and they fancied his chances. I think he actually made his debut at Celtic Park, funnily enough, kind of topical just now. But again, I don't think he'd really get a great chance, but you tend to find with these guys, if they're not getting their chances, there's a reason to it. The one thing I was thinking when you were talking there was, I kind of hope that Dom Thomas doesn't slip into that kind of circumstances. The chat from McGee through the week that he would like to see Thomas going out on loan along with Cadden and Dylan Makin, because he doesn't believe they'll get the 15-20 games they require to build up their first team experience at Motherwell, which kind of disappointed me a bit. I think we all like to see young, exciting players coming through and doing it at Fir Park. My fear is that he maybe goes down to the Championship and almost kind of is considered to have found his level. I do believe that Thomas has got a future at Fir Park. I think he just has to find that for him and be given that chance at the club, or do you regard him as a waste otherwise?
I think that's the issue here, though. He's, in my opinion, he's quite clearly not going to get a chance. Now, like yourself, I think he's very promising footballer, and I would love to see him get a chance. But, however, if he's not going to get a chance, we don't want him sitting on the bench or, you know, in the under-20s doing nothing, essentially, for the next year or two. I would rather see him, if he goes to, you know, maybe a Championship team, get his games, and he comes back. You know, maybe if he's playing competitive football, it can only really improve him, I think. You know, so if he goes there and he plays a few games, whether it be 6 months at the end of this season, you know, he comes back and he's got a better chance of getting into the team. You know, he's learned a wee bit from his time away, first team football. I don't see the problem with that, but as you said, it's a, you know, it's sort of sitting on a knife edge there where he's not going to get the time here, I don't think so.
But it's annoying if it's not happened sooner. Like, he's been on the periphery for the best part of the last 18 months. And under Barraclough, there was many shouts to give him a chance, and very rarely did he get that opportunity. Or if he did, it would be a cameo from the bench for the last 10 minutes. I think the loan should have happened sooner.
Looking back on it, you know, it's easy to say when you're looking back on it, but at this time, right now, you know, he's not featuring, he's not getting a game. I don't even know if he was on the bench yesterday. I can't mind reading it, but if he's not going to get, if he's not going to feature, whether it be even, I don't even think, you know, a 10-15 minute cameo for the bench is enough for him. I think if he's not going to get a game, or even on a semi-regular basis, he needs to go somewhere and play football. And it, as you say, even if he goes away for 6 months here, 6 months at the end, the start of next year, and he comes back a better player, it can only be a good thing. You know, he's tied down for, what, 3 years or something now. So, again, it's, as you say, I completely understand what you're saying, and I completely agree that you should have either had a chance for ourselves, Benu, or we should have been looking to maybe give him first team football somewhere else. But, you know, in perspective, if he's not getting a game just now, I don't think there's any other option but to try and put him somewhere where he will get a chance.
Well, it was actually a conversation about Dom Thomas and, to a lesser extent, guys like Craig Moore and Jack Leach when, you know, the whole idea of the youth system kind of started getting talked about. I think it's because we don't really seem to ever have much of a plan. You know, there's never really, either guys like, you know, Bob McHugh just kind of hang about for ages and are kind of never really given much of a chance, or are just, you know, bit part players for the bench, or we send them out on loan until their contracts run out and then free them. There doesn't really seem to actually be much of a plan, and I think there needs to be more thought into it. It's all very well saying, right, Dom Thomas needs to go somewhere to get first team football. For me, it has to be, you know, more detailed than that. And I'm not suggesting that the club and Mark McGee won't look into more detail. Of course they will. But I think it's easy to just say, oh, well, they need first-team football. But first-team football where? I think, you know, obviously we're never going to be able to send a player out on loan to somewhere abroad. But I think someone like Dom Thomas, that'd be ideal. I mean, if you could send him out to play for some lower league side in Spain or France or Italy, that would suit him a lot better, I think, than sending him to run about a muddy field in air or something, getting booted up and down by big defenders. Okay, he might come back a little bit tougher, but he's not going to come back, you know, developed as a footballer. He's not going to come back necessarily particularly stronger. He might be able to take knocks a bit better. He might be a bit tougher. But I think that it's all very well, you know, that line about how, oh, he needs to get first team football. But, you know, his future could hinge on where that first team football is, because there is no point when you've got a player like Dom Thomas who, yeah, perhaps need to bulk up a little bit, maybe needs to get a wee bit stronger, but he's got a lot of raw talent. He's quick, he's got great feet, he's got potential to be a fantastic footballer. And if you send him on loan to, you know, the first, sorry, League One or League Two or the Championship, just so that he can get booted up and down, I don't really see the point. And particularly the thing with Dom Thomas is that, I think, I agree, he should have got a chance earlier now. I know that Marvin Johnson has came on to a bit of a game since McGee came in, but Marvin Johnson's been poor the majority of the season, and Dom Thomas should have been starting ahead of Marvin Johnson weeks and weeks ago. So he should have already had that chance and didn't get it. But now we're in a situation where if we do send him out on loan and Marvin Johnson picks up a knock or gets suspended, who are we then playing on the left? Are we going to, you know, put Joe Chalmers out there? Are we going to try and do what McGee seemed to do a couple of weeks ago and put Louis Moult on the left? So it's all very well send him out on loan, but there needs to be more thought into where he, what his role is in the team, and where you are going to send him for, you know, the benefit of his career. Because we've done it before. We send players out on loan. You know, they have, you know, I mean, I suppose Lee Irwin, it worked for Lee Irwin. He went to, I think, was it Arbroath, and they loved him there, and he did really well. He's obviously came back to Motherwell, broke into the team, did well, moved too early. If something like that can happen with Thomas, then great. But my fear would be that you essentially stall his career because he doesn't progress as a footballer out on loan. He just basically gets kicked about.
It would be an ideal situation if you could send him somewhere, you know, as you say, where the football is maybe a bit more advanced, even in the low levels of Spain or whatever. But the fact of the matter is, whether he's playing in lower levels of our league or our league, people are going to try and kick him anyway. That's where, you know, he plays in our country. He plays in, you know, sort of attacking midfielder, winger role, whatever you want to call it. And if he goes past somebody, he's going to get hit a couple of times. And I don't disagree. It'd be great if he could go somewhere, you know, learn a bit easier. But the fact of the matter is, if he goes anywhere, he's going to the Championship. Whether or not it will hinder him, whether or not people will put him up and down as harsh as you say, it remains to be seen. But it's the, you know, the whole sort of, can he go here, can he go there? The fact is, he's going to go to somebody like a Morton or a an Air United or something like that, you know, where Craig Moore is. And it's for what I read in his stats, at least he seems to be doing all right as well. But it's, as you say, it's whether or not he goes anywhere, he's not going to get a game here. I think that much is blatantly obvious. So I think he does need to go somewhere. In my opinion, first team football will do him good no matter where it is.
See, I think for me that I think I've lost a lot of faith in our decision making when it comes to, you know, do we send players out on loan or not. I think that we've got it wrong a lot of times. I think there's players that probably should have went out on loan. You know, somebody like Bob McHugh, I can't remember how often he went out on loan previously, but I know he went to Airdrie just before he's, you know, I think it was Airdrie he went on loan to just before his kind of Motherwell career ended. But before that, he was just kind of coming on 5-10 minutes to go. And as a, you know, a wee stocky striker, he could have probably progressed a lot better out on loan rather than warming our bench. But I do think that there's times when that's not necessarily the case. I think that Dom Thomas, if you could get him on, you know, we've got Andrew Bowles now in. Bowlesy as a fitness coach, a conditioning coach. If he could, you know, see about getting Dom Thomas to work on his strength and his conditioning and things like that in the gym, and at the same time, you know, get him some first team football when it's possible, in the first team, whilst also in training, playing alongside and learning for guys like Ainsworth, like Johnson, you know, picking up experience from guys like Pearson, McDonald. I think, you know, for me, I think Dom Thomas would possibly stand to benefit from that more than simply the kind of the route of just sending him out on loan.
Jay, you're making a very compelling case to become Dom Thomas's agent here, because I'm sure he's absolutely buzzing at the prospect of going to Spain for the winter months. That'll
Oh, that's great. Barcelona B away to see Dom Thomas.
the thing is with Thomas, he was on the bench yesterday, Buster, but you think Ainsworth isn't getting a starting berth just now. David Clarkson came on and played wide right yesterday. Does he now go above Thomas in the pecking order, given that he came on and set up the goal? I don't know whether that'll be the case or not. There was a wee story that you linked me to last week, Jay, that Clarkson had mentioned that he was frustrated at the lack of a first team time that he's been getting. I know he's been basically a regular in the development side, so he must be chapping at the bit to get some game time as well. So really, if you're going to have three backup right wingers, something's got to give at some point. So if I was Thomas, I would be gradually getting more and more frustrated at the lack of opportunity at Motherwell, and maybe he is considering that he has to make a move for the progression of his career, and that disappoints me. I think that to a certain degree he's been frozen out too much, and a few good performances have been rewarded with starts, and then if he doesn't take advantage of that start, then he goes right back down to the bottom again and has to kind of climb the ladder, so to speak. So it'll be interesting to see how his mentality has been affected by the kind of setbacks that he's had, because he certainly hasn't ever been given a consistent run of games. I've not got the stats in front of me, but I can't imagine that he's ever started more than two or three games in the bounds.
I think, well, one good thing, I think one positive thing about Dom Thomas is, and I'm pretty sure you two will agree, that, you know, we've obviously had dealings with him in brief, you know, with the player of the year last year and stuff like that, and he does seem, you know, a very switched on guy. He seems to have his head, you know, screwed on. I don't think he's, you know, a Paul Slane type or anything like that. So I think, you know, regardless of what happens, whether he remains on the bench or in the development squad, whether he goes on loan, I don't think there's any doubt that he will put the work in, you know, and he'll stay focused, which is obviously a positive. But he is, I think he's one of the most promising players we've had in quite some time. And I think because I personally think we've been really poor at youth development in recent years, particularly when you compare us to other clubs throughout Scotland. It's a part that we really should have been doing better at, and it's something that we've budgeted for. It's something, you know, year after year we budget to sell players, and very rarely it happens because we don't get it right. And I think it's that concerns me. You know, we need Dom Thomas has the potential to be a really big player for Motherwell and to go on to a higher level if we can get things right. And you know, I remain to be convinced that we possess the ability to do so, because our track record isn't great.
The one thing just, you know, if we're going to stop talking about this, the one thing you mentioned that I'm concerned about is that he does become essentially another Bob McHugh, where, as you say, Bob went and won once or twice, but he hung about the club for, what, 5-6 years? Never really got much of a chance in terms of starting a game, and he came on 5-10 minutes to go every so often, and then essentially, you know, he was just told that, you know, he wasn't good enough or he wasn't in our plans, and then let go. And as you say, Dom Thomas's potential is something that we're all looking to see him fulfil. So I just think that if he sits about and does nothing, it's not going to help him, you know, and I don't see him getting a game for our team basically at the moment.
I think also, just to lay one final point on it, I think we are kind of, hopefully either after January or next season, we might be in a slightly bit, you know, a better position to be bringing through young players. I think we have to identify the fact that the absolutely unreal decision to let Ian Barraclough bring in signing after signing has put us in a position where we've got such a big squad at the moment that young guys, you know, that they're going to have too many players. You know, at the end of the day, if you're playing somebody a wage of a first team squad player, you're probably going to be more likely to put them in the squad than perhaps a young player. So I think that once we, you know, send some loan signings back or cut some of the deadwood in January and next summer, then perhaps you know, the chances of these guys getting into the first team might get a bit greater.
Yeah, I think that it's kind of, that's the problem. It's almost bringing in young players is almost seen as a risk because it's such a, you need the immediate results, and possibly bringing in young guys to the detriment of results is too much of a risk, particularly when managers have only a limited shelf life in a job. I wasn't actually aware that Ian Murray left St Mirren yesterday.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, that's what, I think he got the job the day that we were at Bell Sebastian in May, so that would have been, what, 7 months in the job. How could you possibly tell or turn things around in such a short space of time? I know he had kind of some controversial post-match quotes after they drew with Raith Rovers a couple of weeks ago, but are you going to take unnecessary risks, which bringing in young players might be regarded as, or are you just going to stick with what you know, stick with the experienced heads to get scrappy results and scrappy victories? I think that it's a no-brainer that you're going to go with experience.
Unless you're Jackie McNamara.
But the thing is, as we discussed with Jackie McNamara yesterday, he had a huge advantage of the fact that he was able to sell players to Celtic.
Aye, and make a wee healthy profit on it.
So going to York City, and that's with, I know we're kind of rabbiting on a wee bit and we've went completely off the remember well now, but I was thinking Paul Hartley, his stock was really high at the start of the season. Dundee were playing good football, getting quite a lot of good results, and now they're dropping quite considerably, and they're serious contenders for that playoff position, or even to get dragged into a proper relegation battle. Hartley now possibly isn't regarded as quite as good a manager as he was at the start of the season, and it is quite incredible how quickly managers' stock can fall. McNamara was considered a very good manager at Thistle. Started off all right at Dundee United, and then he's lost 7 or 8 games in the bounce with York City at a low-level English football. It's quite incredible how quickly things can change for managers.
Oh, aye,
is Tony Stewart still
there? Oh, aye, that's a good shout.
I'd forgotten about him. Hold on, I'm going to check that.
I'm surprised he never got mentioned in the Remember Well question as having so much great potential.
I was quite surprised that Bob McHugh didn't get mentioned, because there was a few times that he came
in. You really need to start listening to the Remember Well question, because he did.
Somebody did mention him. Just while you're looking up then, my own personal sort of players who didn't turn out, obviously you've mentioned Saunders, you know, Forbes. I spotted quite quickly with Forbes that there just wasn't something right about him. But, you know, he's just, as he says, he's a left foot with magic. Saunders seemed to get injured and just fell away after that. But all the usual ones have been mentioned, so I'm going to go back to when I was right young. I used to think guys like Greg Denham, Ian Ross, I used to think they guys would maybe...
Ennis Ritchie,
you know, so... When I was younger, I used to think, these guys are pretty solid. They could probably play at Motherwell for years and years. And I think some of them probably did, but they seem to just disappear after that.
York City are the only team with a worse website in football than the Motherwell website. I cannot get it working in this iPad.
Is it up to date for this season, though?
It acknowledges the fact they played yesterday, but it doesn't give you the result of the game.
I went on the Motherwell one last week to check... how many goals Louis Moult had scored, because I had looked it up and I thought the Wikipedia was a wee bit out of date, so I went on the Motherwell one, and it was still telling me that John Sutton was the top goal scoring Motherwell player in the Premier League, so it, you know, 13 goals or whatever it was, so I was like, oh well, that's very good, I'll see if I can work it out myself.
Tony Straker was playing yesterday for York against Bristol. They lost 2-1. He was subbed.
Okay.
Danny Galbraith also plays for them. Straker was on the bench and got brought on. He's wearing the number 13 jersey for York City this year. Strangely as well, yeah. It appears that York City were playing their number 4 in goals. The York City website is not the greatest, it must be said. But it's quite strange to see the way that managers can just fall. Where does McNamara go after he gets sacked at York City?
Back up here with, you know, maybe somebody like...
St Mirren?
St Mirren, aye, exactly. I was trying to think of somebody who needs a manager there, St Mirren, aye. That's exactly where you'd find them, I think, to be honest with you.
It's strange that I actually tweeted a response to something. Someone posted up the odds about for the next... Alo Athletic manager, and Jimmy Calderwood's just sitting there at 41 as usual. Just like Jimmy Calderwood is mentioned as a potential successor to any manager in Scottish football.
Even after Jimmy Calderwood has died, he'll still be linked with every job in Scottish football.
Right, that was a rather morbid way to end the podcast.
Killed in an awkward sunbed accident.
Right. Join us next week where we pay our respects to Jimmy Calderwood.
On the York City podcast.
We should maybe cover a wee bit of every football we know about at the end as well, just to...
The Russian League's got a mention last week.
we were sitting having a beer yesterday in the pub, and he's on his phone checking the Livorno Calgary score and tell me about how Calgary were romping Serie B. He's got a real passion for it as well, so look out for that. That's in the future as well.
Some people pick up your Man U's, your Leeds United's and stuff. No, I played champ manager once with Calgary and they're my team.
Maybe we could send Don there.
Hey, I bet they train him up brilliantly. It'd be the next Julio Deli Valdez, I bet you.
Well, we can work on that over the coming days and give a progress report next week. Get Don to Spain.
Well, we were signing petitions yesterday. Why don't we take one next week?
I think I need to give a special mention to this guy that brought up the boy Tam White that brought up his partition to me to sign. he was telling me in the pub after it, thanks for signing my partition. Yeah, that wasn't a problem. It was referred to as a signature thingy as well at one stage.
His heart was in the right place.
Yes, yeah, so I look forward to him. Hopefully it's like a live stream of him delivering this to the council. Right, there anyway, it's went completely off track now, so we'll wrap it up for this week. Guys, thanks very much.
Cheers.
No bother.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next week. for a review of the Celtic game and the last podcast of the year as well.
Oh,
until then, thank you, goodbye.
For Rudolf Valentino, he had a beano back in the stormy days. He knew every time you meet an icy creature, you've got to teach her her bloody Latin ways. But even Rudy would have felt the strain of making smooth advances in the rain. All this year I'm off to sunny Spain. Hey, viva España! I'm taking the Costa Brava plane. Hey, viva España! If you'd like to chat to Matador in some cool cabana and meet señoritas by the score. España, por favor. Quite by chance to hot romance I found the answer. Flamenco dancers are far the finest bit. There was one who whispered, ooh, hasta la vista, each time I kissed him behind the castanet. He rattled his maracas close to me. In no time I was trembling at the knee. All this year I'm off to sunny Spain. Hey, viva España! I'm taking the Costa Brava plane. Hey, viva España! If you'd like to check the matador in some cool cabana and meet señoritas by the score, España, por favor. When they first arrive, the girls are pink and pasty, but also tasty as soon as they go brown. I guess they know every fellow will be queuing to do the wooing his girlfriend won't allow. But still I think today's a lucky day. That's why I've learned the way to shout, hola! All this year I'm off to sunny Spain. Hey, viva España! I'm taking the Costa Brava plane. Hey, viva España! If you'd like to check the matador.